time, Mr. Wilmoth needs to hear from you in the United States v. Stover.
May it please the Court, I am Bill Wilmoth. I represent Elbert Stover in a case that is before the Court as a result of his conviction on counts 1 and 3 of the superseding indictment out of the Southern District of West Virginia. This case arises from the April 2010 explosion of the Upper Big Branch mine in the Southern District of West Virginia, in which 29 miners were killed. My client, Elbert Stover, is the high school educated former deputy sheriff head guard of the mine, and was indicted and was convicted for two things. One, he was convicted under 1001 for knowingly making a false and material statement in a deposition, as the government calls it, as we all call it, at MSHA's station house, the Mine Academy in Beaver, West Virginia, to which he was subpoenaed by the state of West Virginia. MSHA agrees that it has no power to subpoena people to proceedings like this, and so it used the state of West Virginia as a cat's paw to do what it could not have done. But unfortunately, the statute, the West Virginia statute, doesn't allow even what was done. Under the West Virginia statute, the West Virginia Department has the authority to subpoena people to hearings, and it also, and there's a semicolon, and that it also has the right to require evidence during an investigation. This was not a hearing. It's not a public matter. It was...
The difficulty with that particular argument is that it has to do with remedy, doesn't it? Assuming you're correct about whether there's a violation of the West Virginia statute, you're seeking exclusion of some sort of evidence, aren't you?
I am.
Well, where does it say that? Where does the West Virginia statute indicate the remedy for a violation of this particular West Virginia provision is exclusion?
There is
little. Are we just to read a remedy into the statute?
There is little, if any, guidance in the statute.
What's that?
There is little, if any, guidance in the statute.
We can't just read a remedy into the statute.
Well, if the court determines that this was a custodial or semi-custodial interrogation, which it's our position
that's a different question, but the other thing is you're talking about violation of state law, and you're talking about violation of a statutory rule, and the federal court apply an exclusionary remedy to violation of the Constitution. But we don't apply an exclusionary remedy of evidence to violations of state law, or particularly when there's no remedy stipulated in state law. And we don't apply an exclusionary rule for statutory violations unless the legislative branch has indicated it wishes to have one. So, and I think it's just a huge leap I don't even know if you write us to the violation, but I certainly know you don't jump from an alleged violation to some sort of exclusionary rule in federal court of state law and alleged statutory violations. That would be novel, to say the very least.
I understand.
Move on to some of your other arguments.
All right, sir. Perhaps I should move as to count one, then to the fact that there was no evidence that this was a knowingly false statement. I teach evidence law part-time at West Virginia University, and I tell my students all the time that it's incredibly difficult to get an appeals court to overturn a verdict of any kind because of insufficiency of the evidence. This is not an insufficiency of the evidence case. This is an absence of evidence case. There is no evidence in before the trial court that Mr. Stover knew that what he was saying was either false or material to the investigation. He was reiterating his legal opinion, educated by Massey Coal Company's lawyers, that the procedure that his guards were doing was not illegal. And there is no way, and certainly the government offered no evidence, to prove that that statement, his conception of the law, was incorrect.
I thought he was testifying that the UVV policy, I thought his deposition testimony, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought his deposition testimony was that the UVB policy was never to call the mines and notify miners when federal inspectors came on the scene, and that he testified he was following the policy when he was training security agents, when he was training the security guards all the time to give notice to everybody when the federal inspectors were about to arrive.
When he became the head of security many years ago, the practice, the policy, was for the guards to pick up the phone and call the mine and tell them that an inspector was on the property and on the way. Mr. Stover put a stop to that. What he was doing was what he had been directed to do, which was announce everyone, not just inspectors. John Smith from UPS is on the property. Mary Brown from MSHA is on the property. Everyone was announced in the same way, and he did that based on the advice of the company's attorneys that was legal since everyone was being announced. And
wouldn't that be a jury question as to whether the company's attorneys, whether he knew of the company's policy or not? I don't understand why that isn't purely factual in nature.
It is purely factual, but the point is that there was no evidence offered from which the jury could determine that he knew that that was advance notice. The term advance notice, which, by the way, he was not charged with, was thrown around throughout the trial, and there was no evidence offered that Mr. Stover knew that the procedure that they were undertaking was advance notice. To the contrary, the evidence was entirely that Mr. Stover believed that what they were doing was not advance notice under the statute.
Calling them and telling them that federal security, what other purpose would there be for the call?
Well, they weren't
calls.
Other
than to give them advance notice.
I'm sorry. They weren't calls, Your Honor. It was a radio transmission that the dispatchers in another building overheard if they happened to be in the same room where the radio
and
was.
What was the content of the radio transmission? That the feds were here?
The content was Mary Brown from MSHA is on the property, Joe Smith from UPS is on the property. Everyone was announced in the same way,
so
and
the
purpose was safety.
What other purpose would it have been? Would there have been?
The stated reason was safety, so that people would know that there were perhaps the UPS truck is coming up the hill when a big dump truck full of coal is coming down. That's the announced
reason. The jury
reason.
Would be allowed to say that was a pretext. The stated reason was safety. The advance notice would seem to me as a matter of, a jury could say, no, the advance notice or the alert was to get people to tidy up the place before the inspectors actually got on the scene and make it seem as if there were fewer violations.
And that advance notice to which Your Honor refers was given by the dispatchers as a result of hearing the announcements over the radio.
I guess I'm not entirely clear. You say that your claim here is one of an absence of evidence of knowledge. Is that your contention?
Yes, sir.
Absence of knowledge of what?
that the statement that we don't make advance notice under the statute, or words to that effect, was false.
Well, but that's not the statement. That's not the indictment language. The indictment language is that whether there existed a policy and practice, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Right. And well, and Mr. Stover's testimony was that his belief was that what they were doing was not a policy and practice of violating the advance notice statute.
And there his was his belief.
Yes. And the government has to prove that he knowingly made a false statement to
and that the
effect.
Jury decided the government did prove that.
Well, the jury heard no evidence that Mr. Stover had any other knowledge than what Mr. Stover said. And that was
that's
his
legal
conclusion.
That's not true. There was tons of circumstantial evidence from the other witnesses
there
as
was
to what he knew.
There was tons of circumstantial evidence that about what the practice was.
And what he knew about the practice
sure.
And his involvement in furthering the practice.
But he wasn't charged with the advance notice practice, Your Honor. He was charged with making a false statement.
About the advance notice practice.
About the illegality of what they were doing.
No, yeah. See, I think I disagree with you there. It's not a question of whether he thought it was legal or not. It was a question of what he said when questioned about it compared to what the other evidence showed he knew about it. And its very existence. Is the way I read the record.
Yes, I understand, and you are asking the questions that the government has raised in its reply brief. And I understand that. I have.
Yeah, I just want to say it seems to me less complicated than you're trying to make it. As I understand it, the deposition testimony, we are only talking about one count, which is a false statement count, as opposed to the destruction of the visitor logs and incident violations and things. That he went in there and at this deposition, he says the UBB policy was never to call minors and notify minors. And he testifies he follows it. And then the evidence shows that he was training security guards to do exactly the opposite.
No, with great respect, Your Honor.
That's not your interpretation of the evidence, but that seemed to me what the trial was about. He was saying the policy was one thing, and he was training guards to do a very different thing.
Now, the call he's talking about is a telephone call, an actual call by his guards to the mine to tell them that the inspectors are coming, and that's the practice that he stopped. So he was absolutely correct in the fact that they don't call the guards.
Whether it's through telephone or radio transmission, as long as they get the word.
Oh,
I mean, you know, there's a serious issue here because there have been some terrible mine calamities in West Virginia in which, you know, a large number of people have lost their lives under very tragic circumstances.
Yes, sir.
And you know, and Misha's trying to put a stop to that, but as with most federal agencies, they're fairly strapped for resources and they can't begin to cover all of the different mines that conceivably are covered by the statute. So what they do rely on are spot inspections, that you don't know when they're coming or when they're going to be here. And no, it has to be a question of randomness. And that whole approach is defeated of spot random inspections. That whole approach is defeated if everybody goes through a drill once they know the inspectors are on the ground. And he's trying to muddy the waters big time here by what he's saying.
Well, I understand your position. First of all, big mines like this one have inspectors virtually every day. So it's not a spot here and there kind of inspection.
But not all day, every day.
I mean, oh, no, of course not. The mines operate 24 hours a day, and you're right. They're not there 24 hours a day themselves. But it seems to me, and I have a red light, and I apologize.
Oh, you finished.
it seems to me that what MSHA has chosen to do by never citing Mr. Stover, any of his guards or Performance Coal Company or anyone else, to my knowledge, even today, with a write him a ticket, a speeding ticket, a citation for giving advance notice and allow that process to go forward and allow the administrative law judge and the commission to decide whether or not what they were doing was in fact a violation. That's the problem with the government's case.
All right, thank you. Ms. Malkin, whenever you're ready. So there seems to be some confusion here, and could you just tell us exactly what the evidence was and what this person did that constituted the materially false statement?
Yes, Your Honor. The defendant took a his deposition was taken at the Mine Academy in front of various investigative teams, the MSHA team, a team from the state, and an independent team that had been appointed by then-Governor Manchin. During that deposition, he was asked, what are the instructions regarding visitors? He responded, the one thing that's hammered in our heads is that when inspectors come on the property, you do not call, you do not notify. That was then followed up on three or four other times. He was asked, are there any other instructions regarding inspectors? Anything else? He said, it's in our SOP, their standard order of procedure, that we do not call, we do not notify. He was asked one more time, I want to make sure I understand, is there anything else about inspectors? He reiterated, the only thing is that we do not notify anyone when they come on the property. The evidence at trial was all contrary to that. Each security guard that testified, Mr. Burgess, Mr. Wingo, Mr. Williams, all testified that when an inspector came on the property, they had been trained to announce that inspector over two radio channels, the internal security channel and what they called the Mont Cole channel. Each person testified to that. The consistent evidence was also that the security guards and Mr. Stover was aware that the mine office where the dispatchers sat contained a radio which monitored the Mont Cole channel and which listened to those transmissions and got notice when the inspectors were on the property, and they in turn called underground. So there was a ton of evidence on count one that his statements that no one was notified was completely opposite of the practice and procedure undertaken by his guards under his training, including a memo that said we announce everyone, not just the inspectors, including evidence that policy that Mr. Lilly, another guard, got in trouble for calling out inspectors in 2007. So there was testimony from all the guards and two dispatchers that this was the practice that occurred at the mine. It's also clear that Mr. Stover was aware of that practice because the record also contained evidence that he trained the guards to do that. He reminded the guards to do that and sent out memos reminding.
Were there any objections to the instructions here that were submitted to the jury or whatever?
There was a couple of objections to the jury instructions. One was that the court denied defendant's request for an advice of counsel instruction. There was another one regarding the definition of willfully submitted by the government.
Well, basically, your view is that this is a jury question.
Yes, Your Honor. It's a factual question. They can determine from the evidence they saw.
And there are all kinds of constitutional arguments, but they've been rejected time and time again. And it really boils down to a factual matter, doesn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. It's clearly a factual matter. The jury heard the statements and they heard the evidence from all the other guards and from defendant himself about what the practice and policy was at the mine.
We have no further questions.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Wilmer?
I don't know what else to really add. You didn't have many questions for Ms. Malkin, so unless the court has other questions for me.
Well, we thank you very much. Well, we come down and recounsel, and then we'll move directly into our